Have you heard the word natality? In statistics, it's used to describe the birth rate of a given population, but in philosophy, as coined by Hannah Arendt, it's a counterpoint to mortality, a word to describe the fundamental importance of birth as a universal human experience. Here to talk about the underexplored terrain of natality is Jennifer Banks, author of the new book, Natality: Toward a Philosophy of Birth. Jennifer is a senior executive editor at Yale University Press, whose writing has appeared in the Boston Review and Pleiades, among other publications. Here she is to share some key insights from her book.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Banks, senior executive editor at Yale University Press and author of the book, Natality: Toward a Philosophy of Birth. Today, I'm going to share with you five of the key insights from my book. Insight number one, natality. When my mother told a friend that I planned to title my book on birth natality, her friend said, "Don't let her do that. No one will know what that means." Her friend wasn't entirely wrong. Natality is not a word in our everyday vocabulary, although its counterpart, mortality, very much is. My book, Natality, began as an exploration of what I saw as a very strange omission in our languages, stories, and cultural life. How we don't have a word for birth that conveys what mortality conveys for death. How birth shapes every human life from its beginning to its end. Growing up, I had the privilege of an excellent education, but birth was not the subject of undergrad survey classes or graduate seminars that I took as a student. And so in 2009, when I gave birth to my first child, I was left asking the questions that so many people ask after giving birth. Why did no one tell me what this was like? Why did no one prepare me? My life had just been revolutionized by birth, and so these absences and silences in my education and upbringing stunned me. Around this time, I also observed a strange thing. Death had become a cottage industry. The bestseller lists were full of books on death. At Yale, undergrads lined up to take a philosophy class called Death, one of the most popular classes on campus. Across the globe, aging baby boomers gathered with hip millennials in death cafes to discuss their mortality while sipping craft beers and eating cupcakes decorated with tombstones. But there were no birth cafes, no hipsters lining up to frequent them. In experiencing birth and trying to understand those experiences, I was beginning to consciously wrestle with my natality. And this led me into a blue sky, unexplored territory. Although this wrestling was initiated by my experience giving birth, anyone can engage with natality. We all, of course, were born. Insight number two, always be beginning. Birth is about beginnings. The beginnings of our individual lives and our children's lives, but also the beginnings of our collective lives as communities and as a species. To the degree that we are unprepared for birth, we are unprepared to begin new things at all, to be creative, to come up with new solutions to old problems, or to deal with people or realities we've never experienced before. In making these claims, I'm drawing on the insights of Hannah Arendt, the political theorist who coined the phrase natality and whose work is one of the key sources I draw on in my book. She is perhaps a surprising person to have insisted on birth's beginnings, as the defining experience of her adult life was not becoming a mother, she never had children, but her near escape from Nazi Germany's death camps. Arendt was a German Jew, and after Hitler came to power, she was arrested by the Nazis and later interned at a camp for women in the south of France. She escaped that camp and fled to New York, where she was given a second chance at life. She took that chance, and she made the most of it, becoming one of the leading public intellectuals of the post-war period. Her new beginning did not entail forgetting what had just happened. Arendt began writing to try to process the utter collapse of the world she had known. In 1951, she published The Origins of Totalitarianism, a book that opens by stressing the grimness of the present and by describing a calm in which hope had died. After hundreds of pages of analysis of genocidal regimes, she ends her book with a stunning passage about birth's beginnings. She concludes very soberly, but with a cautious sense of resilient promise, that every end in history also contains a new beginning. This beginning, she continues, is the promise, the only message which the end can ever produce. She argues that beginning is our supreme capacity as humans, and that it is identical with our freedom. We are each guaranteed this free capacity to act and begin new things, not by any government, but simply by virtue of our having been born. Birth for her was the great anti-totalitarian act. Her work reminds us that both our individual lives and our civilizational futures depend on our natality, our ability, willingness, and responsibility to act as agents in our societies and to engage with the work of constantly renewing our world. Insight 3, shocked wonder at the miracle of being. Most people I know who've had a child testify to what I experienced at the birth of my children, a shocked sense of wonder. In the place where there had been no person, there was suddenly a new, unprecedented being, a person who arrived with her own features, mood, aversions, and affinities. Where had she come from? Who was she? Who would she become? Across the globe, people birth around 385,000 babies a day, and those births are not treated as breaking news by the media. Birth can seem so ordinary and routine that it is easy to forget how each of those babies represents a completely new expression of what a human life can be. In the 21st century, in a capitalist age of ruthless exploitation of people, other species, and our planet, life is often treated as cheap and disposable. In such conditions, expressing a sense of wonder can seem a little out of touch. Cynicism or despair are often seen as more realistic responses to our world. But feeling and expressing wonder is not a denial of reality. It is a natural engagement with reality, as Hannah Arendt and so many of the other brilliant thinkers I engage with in my book recognized. By staying close to birth, we can witness how each of us is, as Hannah Arendt put it, an infinite improbability which occurs regularly. This infinite improbability, Arendt continued, constitutes the very texture of everything we call real. Our whole existence, she continued, rests on a chain of miracles. As far as we know, life does not exist on any other planet. Its coming into being was a cosmic fluke, as was the evolution of our species. Our wonder testifies to the very strangeness, fragility, and uniqueness of this rare thing we are inside of, life itself. For Hannah Arendt, and many other figures in my book, a shocked wonder at the miracle of being was a defiant refusal of totalitarian nihilism, fatalism, false narratives, and oblivion. Insight number 4, birth is other people. Hell is other people. This famous line from French existentialist Jean-Paul Sartre's No Exit entered the zeitgeist decades ago, and its sentiment infuses our contemporary moment. The news this week has been full of stories of Americans shooting innocent people who made the dangerous mistake of turning into a neighbor's driveway or knocking on their door. Amid the intense polarization of a highly armed citizenry, other people can quickly become a threat to one's safety, autonomy, or well-being. So much of our public discourse reinforces the idea that a person is better off going it alone, conserving her own resources, and doubting the motivations of her peers. The truth, however, is that we live among other people in webs of such profound interconnection and indebtedness that the separate autonomous selves we have come to believe in so maniacally are largely illusions. Birth reminds us of these interconnections. While we can die alone, we are never born alone. Most births originate in an intimate encounter, however pleasurable or painful, between two people. Most babies live for months in another person's body, depending entirely upon that body. And most deliveries are assisted by nurses, doctors, midwives, neighbors, friends, or family members. To keep a newborn alive requires around-the-clock care. If we survived our infancy and childhood, it was because other people made sacrifices and took care of us, however imperfectly. we owe our lives to them. These interconnections between people are what the deadliest, most genocidal political regimes have wanted to sever, even as they mobilize the masses. Once people are isolated from one another, they have little chance at collective action, and therefore little power to resist false propaganda, dangerous ideologies, and even deadly directives. Engaging with Natality has therefore a distinctly democratic function. It reminds us of just how significant and life-changing our coming together with other ordinary people can be. Insight number 5, humanity has a future. I remember sitting with my father and his brother at a Christmas party when I was in my mid-20s and hearing them speak in despairing tones about the state of the world. "I want to bring children into the world today," one commented, and the others nodded in quick assent. A moralism, a deep concern for their children and future generations, as well as worries about the sustainability of our planet, drove their conversation. They weren't alone in their concern. Natality rates are now at record lows in much of the industrialized world. For many, it has become hard to believe that the decades and centuries that stretch out before us will be livable for humans, and that future generations will have the chances we have had to be alive, or maybe even to live healthier, happier, more enlightened, or more prosperous lives than our ancestors. But giving up on our future is a dangerous proposition too. What motivation, then, would we have to care for our world or to make it a better place? As the great American novelist Toni Morrison observed, the brightest and most confident accounts of redemptive human future have come in recent decades, not from the centers of power, but from their margins, from the people most vulnerable to catastrophe. Listening to the voices on those margins, Morrison concluded that time does have a future, longer than its past and infinitely more hospitable to the human race. I like to think she was right. Reading through her illuminating and challenging testament to Natality, I thought a lot about my father. His experiences becoming a grandfather in his 60s changed him. It opened up a future he had despaired wasn't livable. When my daughter, his first grandchild, was born, he held her in his arms, looked down upon her with bewildered awe, and said, "She is just beginning."
Thanks, Jennifer. That was Jennifer Banks with 5 Big Ideas from Natality Toward a Philosophy of Birth. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.